Hello, Val here. Armin and I are so thrilled to have artist and tech expert Tisha Blackburn with us today from San Francisco. I consider Tisha my mentor guide in all things marketing and tech. She is one of the most generous teachers I know. Listen as she gives us much food for thought in navigating this new space of art meets tech. Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Welcome to Art Ladders, everyone. This is episode 29 we have going here, and we're going to be having an interview with a wonderful artist here in just a moment. But Armin, what are you up to out there?
Oh, same old thing, making art, teaching, making art, teaching. What else is there to do, right?
Oh, there's lots to do. And we're lucky to have this wonderful podcast this summer to keep us busy. And so this is one of the episodes where we're going to introduce an artist. And that artist is Tisha Blackburn. And she is the acrylic diva. And she's out there in San Francisco. We are so honored to have her. She's going to be talking to us quite a bit about the combination of art and tech. And I recently had the wonderful pleasure to take a online class with her regarding online teaching for artists. And as many of you know, who've been in my class now, we took that to the next level. And I have Tisha to thank for that. She is my mentor. So Tisha, welcome. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Val. Thank you, Armin. It's really fun to be here. I'm excited.
Oh, good. And we're going to start in here with, where did your art journey begin? How early was that? Where did it take you, that path you took? We'd love to hear about it.
Well, my very first painting was Paint by Numbers.
Oh, and, I remember those.
Right. And I was 10 years old. Oh. And that started my love of painting. And then I studied, played music as well. And in high school, I kept painting and I kept playing music. And they actually, the scholarship that they gave me was for music, not for art. Oh. But I decided not to take that path. And so I moved to San Francisco and kept painting and eventually enrolled in art school a little bit later than most people, but I was in my mid-20s and enrolled in art school, fell in love with creating and, making art, and then, you know, had to face the idea of making a living.
Right.
So that's sort of where the tech comes in. That's how a kind of circuitous route, but I got to tech and art and actually now I'm sort of made a marriage of the two of them, tech and art. So
how did you go to school?
I went to the Academy of Art here in San Francisco. Okay. And did my undergrad there and then did my grad work at JFK University over in the East Bay, and actually started teaching while I was still in graduate school. Had a great teacher who told me that I had to go out into the community and start teaching before she'd let me graduate, before she'd sign off on my graduation. And I actually went into that grad program with a pretty big ego. I thought I was going to be something, you know, and because I'd had a little bit of regional notoriety between undergrad and grad school. So I thought, oh, I'm going to be an artist, you know, with a capital A. And she was like, yeah, no, you need a fallback plan. And I was like, no, I don't want to be a teacher. No. And she made me start teaching in the community and stuff. And I don't know how she saw it or anything, but man, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with teaching and I've been teaching ever since.
Oh, okay. Right. And, you know, you hit that magic button when you said, hey, art, but then there's the money part. Tell right. me about some of those money-making adventures oh. you've had out there. I know a little glimmer, but tell right. us.
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I had a business teacher who taught me typing and minimal accounting and believe it or not, shorthand. Those were the days. But, you know, she told me, she said, no matter what you do, this will feed you and keep a roof over your head if you keep typing. And so I, being in San Francisco, you know, there were a ton of temp jobs. So I ran from one temp job to another all through art school. And then, you know, we're so close to Silicon Valley mm-hmm. that I don't know, it just sort of got in the water, you know, the tech. And I would be at some company that was making whatever, computers or whatever. And, you know, you just sort of kind of get it by being in the neighborhood. And so I started working at temp jobs and, you know, supported myself through art school. Mm-hmm. And then I actually thought maybe I can get a job as a medical illustrator. You know, that's like a job, and I can do art and, you know, have a job. And unfortunately, I found out that there's a whole lot more to it than just drawing. You have to take pre-med and do gross anatomy and stuff. And I was like, okay, no, never mind. So I just went back to typing, and one thing led to another. And, you know, I ended up doing some medical transcription, and because of the, you know, anatomy I'd had in art school. And then I also, that sort of rolled into doing some video and some tech transcription and stuff. And it just kind of all came, it's sort of in the air, you know, mm-hmm. and I fell in love with tech. Mm-hmm. And art, and sort of, I've been in love with it ever since, you know.
I can sure tell. We can tell. And, yeah, you and I met through the Golden Artist Working Program.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were one of the teachers out there that were already placed in the program. I was moving in. That was kind of ways back there.
And, yeah.
And I just remember your enthusiasm for sharing information with all of us newbies. That I so appreciated. So oh. I believe your grad advisor was very smart to lead you down the teaching path as well with everything else that you do.
Wow. She was very smart about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So adding the tech portion. Now, I remember when this recent class that I took with you,
right.
you talked a lot in the very beginning about artists needing to know this and how we're kind of almost missing the boat if we don't jump on board with this. Can you talk a little bit more about the potential that we can have?
Right. Yeah. I think, you know what? The tech ship has sailed. There's no more a question about whether or not you need to be involved in tech. If you are not, you know, aware of what's going on, and if you don't have your fingers in there a little bit, then really, you know, that's, you've got your head in the sand a little bit, mm-hmm. right? Sure. Because this ship has sailed, y'all, you know? Yes. there is no going back. There's no going back. And so you have a choice. You can either get somebody to do it for you, mm-hmm. or you can learn to do it yourself, but you can't deny it anymore. You can't ignore it anymore. So, you know, getting somebody to do it for you is a path, but I don't recommend it for the simple reason that you're always going to be at the mercy of somebody. You're always going to be paying it out of pocket, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So I really think just jump in the pool, just jump in the deep end of the pool. And learn to swim. You don't have to take on everything all at once, but there are tons and tons and tons of free videos, mm-hmm. free courses, tons of stuff. And I think the fear of failure or the fear of, you know, the unknown is what keeps a lot of artists from starting to investigate. And that's, you know, that is really detrimental to your career.
It really is. A lot happened during COVID where people had to get on Zoom because they were home. You couldn't go to school and all these kinds of things. And then a percentage of them just kind of shut down. And no, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but it certainly isn't the hardest. I think you have to jump into it with the confidence, just like doing an art. You know, every time you do art, you have to have the confidence you're going to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not as if you're going to ruin something that you can't recreate. So, you know, in painting, right? Every time you start a canvas, you get one layer down, the next layer, you have to be willing to sacrifice that painting all along the way until it's finished, because that very next brushstroke you make could be the one that ruins everything, right? I mean, you know, y'all have done that. We've all done that, right? You got a great thing going and all of a sudden like, yeah, it needs a great big red stripe right down the middle. Oh my God, what was I thinking?
Why you know? Did I do that?
And you can't just hit the back button when you're painting.
Yeah, right. You can't go undo. No. Yeah. And well, but I think that my advice really is not to ignore it. Don't keep your head in the sand. And also don't be a defeatist. You know, I hear this over and over again. Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. Yes, you can. You absolutely can. You're not going to get it right the first time. But then, you know, you didn't get the painting right the first time either.
Right. That's true. And just by following along, yes, you aren't going to get it right. You're not going to remember it. But what I really love about it is knowing where to get the answers, you know, and having YouTube videos, like you mentioned. And I know with your class, we have a whole library of things we can get back to. And you can only digest so much at one sitting.
Right.
So you have to be patient with yourself that way too.
Oh yeah. 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 Well, you know, what's that saying? How do you eat an elephant? Yes. One bite at a time.
Yes.
You know? That's it's so true. I mean, and you know, I now have mentors that I go to for, you know, stuff. And I think that is what you have to do.
I absolutely agree. And I would love, is that
tough? I don't think there's an age limit to it either. Have to be in your 40s or whatever, you know. I think in your later years, you can understand that and manage to control the technology to some extent, you know. I mean,
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think that is a really, really good point, to not let that sort of ageist attitude deter you. Because, you know, if someone said to me, well, you know what, Tisa, you're too old to do that, I'd be like, oh, say what?
Right.
I don't think so, you know? And why would you say that to yourself?
I'm not about anything. I'm all over it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I'm like, no. So, yeah, don't do it to yourself either. I'm too old to learn this.
Come on. Yeah.
I didn't know when people said you're too young for that. I didn't buy that either.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's you're true. Right.
Yeah.
Got to keep that.
It goes both ways.
That's right. And you know, the following mentors, be it directly or again, back on YouTube or any of the outlets that we follow them on, so much information. I would love to hear who a few of your mentors are and why they're your mentors. Or is that kind of under the, you keep that kind of.
Oh, no.
Oh,
great. I give everything away.
I thought so. That's why I'm having.
I give everything away. And you know why?
Why?
Because I've had mentors who gave me everything.
Oh, that's.
I'm so paying it forward. I'm just paying it forward.
I'm going to remember that.
Yeah. And you know what? I've also, on that topic, just a quick aside, I've also addressed that idea of scarcity mentality with some of my peers. that are like, no, I have this fabulous technique and I'm not going to tell you about it. Really? Really? That's not cool. That's not cool.
It really isn't.
That's not cool with me at all. And here's the kicker in that. Somehow if that scarcity mentality, people think, well, you know, if I give this away, then I'm going to lose money, or I'm going to lose students, mm-hmm. or I'm going to lose something. I'm going to lose something. And the fact of the matter is, the more you give away, the more you get back. I am not kidding you one bit. I mean,
it's absolutely the truth. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the more experienced you are as a teacher and an artist, you become more abundant. You do become more giving of your expertise. So hopefully, it's probably a confidence issue too, being super confident.
You have to be a lifelong learner to be a good teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good point. That's an excellent point.
Every time somebody asks me a question, I don't always have the answer. And I could make it up, but you know, usually I'll say, listen, I don't really know that, you know, but let me check on that and I will get back to them. And I learn stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is that give and take thing. That's y'all know from teaching, mm-hmm. you know, from teaching that it's actually, I mean, it's like chocolate ice cream and peanut butter and fairy tales and unicorns. It's like the best high in the world, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, when you have a student that you see that light bulb go off over their head, that's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
oh yeah.
You know, I mean,
so rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best. Mm-hmm. And you know, my mentors, right now, I'm deep into some super tech mentors right now, mm-hmm. and in commerce. So as you may know, I'm getting ready to launch an entirely new product line. I recently became a corporation.
Wow! Congrats!
Woo. I became a corporation. Oh my god! And I'm trademarked now. Curly Divas trademarked.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm getting ready to launch this whole product line that is not painting. Mm-hmm. It's digital, mm-hmm. and all tech, mostly tech. But so I am in a brand new arena, and I'm working with mentors over there and in that arena. And one of the mentors that I work with is Kevin King. You can Google him. He'll come up a billion times. And then I'm also working with, oh my God, his name went right out of my head. Photoshop Cafe is his YouTube channel.
Okay.
Oh, my brain. I can't think of his name. That's
Photoshop Cafe.
Shame on me. We'll yeah, Photoshop Cafe is his YouTube channel. And he is my Photoshop guru. So I'm working a lot with Photoshop and tech. And those are two of my big gurus right now. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been working on Photoshop?
Off and on, I've been working in Photoshop probably for 20 years, but in the last, I would say, 5 years, I've really gone deep into Photoshop and really expanded what I can do and what I knew how to do, and have really combined analog art with digital art and Photoshop. So it's all... Yeah. It's all now coming together. Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing right now.
Are you? Oh, how fun.
Yeah. And I've used Photoshop for 20 years, but it wasn't until I started having to do demos on drawing with, you know, a pen and a pad and just getting the coordination together to be able to do
right.
it. You're working on a pad down here and it's on the screen and then making it look like a pencil drawing. That wasn't an easy thing to do because, you know, so it takes a while. It just takes.
Yeah.
And you got to play with these things. You're going to get into trouble. And sometimes people ask me, because I teach iPhonography, And people ask me, well, how do you do this app? And I said, you got to get it and you got to play with it. That's all mm-hmm. I can do. Mm-hmm.
That's true. You just have to start pushing buttons, you know, and unless the smoke starts coming out of the back of my MacBook, I'm in good shape, you know, like I haven't blown anything up yet.
I know the last time you and I were talking, Tisa, you were getting ready to, you were doing a lot with Procreate. I yes. don't know really anything about that.
I'm oh my gosh.
So tempted. Armin, you do quite a bit with it, right?
Yeah, but it's a really deep program. It's like Photoshop. You can use it for years and years, and it's much deeper than you even think it would be. Mm-hmm. And Procreate is, I do this thing called app stacking, where I'm using four or five different apps to create a piece of art, which comes from my iconography, and Procreate just happens to be one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you, Tisa, do you have online classes or will you have any on Procreate?
Yeah, I have a whole classroom on Procreate.
Okay.
And I actually have, I think there's a free Procreate class in there too. And then on my YouTube channel, I have 10 or 11 Procreate YouTubes that, you know, demos on Procreate. Yeah.
My students will love to hear that.
Yeah. I'll have to look.
I'm sorry. What was that, Armin?
I said, my students will love to hear that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah.
On Procreate. And I said, no, I'm not going to demo on Procreate. I can just barely do it myself, let alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, Apple asked me to come to the Apple flagship store. Was right before the pandemic. So that would have been 2019. It's all a blur, right?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And they asked me to come to the Apple store and do a demo on sort of this idea of tech and art together. You know, how I went from being a traditional artist and moving into digital art and how I did that. And so I did it's called a day at Apple. And, and it's really, boy, when you do something like that, you know, and I started in Procreate and we did some exercises and stuff with the audience and whatnot. But what's really cool about it is seeing your artwork on that 30-foot video screen.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? Oh. So yeah, you can, on my website, if you go to acrylicdiva.com and you just search Apple event or something, it'll come up. That page will come up.
How
and you
exciting.
See the picture there of this giant artwork. It's like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Being at first a traditional artist helped you be a better artist on Photoshop and things like that. I certainly do because I've been drawing for 60 years. And to work on these programs, it's my drawing ability that I transfer to that really helps.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I actually, when I teach Procreate or work in the digital realm, one of the things that I tell both my students and myself that I keep in my mind is that, first of all, there's this myth that the app is going to make you an artist. That ain't going to happen.
You can
noodle around in there. An amateur or someone who's just starting out, a beginner, can noodle around in there and do stuff and make things look pretty cool and stuff. But if you don't have any design skills, if you don't have any design training, you can tell the difference when the artist working digitally has the design skills to back it up, right? So there's that. And you can definitely go into Procreate or any other digital app and start learning and get your design skills, you know, but you still need to know things like, you know, rhythm and balance and, you know, you need to know all composition and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think an app is going to make you a better artist, but it's going to whatever skills you have. If when you bring it to that app's going to give you the opportunity to create with the skills you have. And you can actually expand your skills because you've got another tool, you know? And so one of the things that I have, some of the feedback that I have over the years working in a digital fashion is, you know, that thing that people say, well, you know, that's not real art. That ain't real. you know, because you did it in an app. And I always make the analogy between the Gutenberg press and printed books, right? So I always think, you know, those monks that were sitting in the scriptorium and they were laboriously, illustrating the Book of Kells on sheepskin, right? And then, of course, the Gutenberg press, they're like, this will never catch on. This Gutenberg press thing, that's a total fad. And it's not real because we didn't, you know, right?
And they said that with photography, too. They thought photography was going to kill painting and this and that and the other thing. It's all about reinventing it and using things as a tool, you know?
It's a tool. It's nothing more than a tool. And so all of that kind of negative stuff about, well, that's not real art, Tuesday, you know, that's where that comes from. First of all, it comes from fear of tech, number one.
Right.
And then number two, it comes from a lack of understanding of what tools are. You know, when you're making an art, when you're an artist, it's all about the tools. It doesn't matter what tool it is. It could mm-hmm. be, you know, for Andy Goldsworthy, it's tree branches,
right,
and icicles, you know, mm-hmm. and for us, it's paint and canvas and pencils and iPads and, you know, David Hockney. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine somebody telling David Hockney it's not real?
Oh man. I know.
Well, I have to say, when people say that, I just, you know, I say, you just don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to sit here and try to explain it to you because I go nowhere. You
know? Right.
Right.
Yeah, I you got to pick your battle. Yeah.
And we use a grid sometimes. And sometimes people, isn't that cheating? I said, no, it's just bringing it down to a smaller space. There is no cheating. It's not a game.
Right. Right? It's not baseball.
No. You're using things to make you a better artist.
Right. Yeah.
In the beginning, you know, when you used to do thumbnail sketches, I do that now all on apps. And I have more time to draw. And, you know, I can do a million more than I would in a sketchbook. So if you don't want to do it, don't.
Yeah. 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 It's just a tool. And, you know, I mean, stop and think about it. We've only had paint in tubes since about 1849.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and stretched canvas, buying a stretched canvas at the store.
That's
what's that last 50 years, maybe.
Oh yeah.
Right? Yeah. You know, so I,
time marches on. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta, you know, either get on the bus or not, you know,
mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, but it's just tools. Yeah.
You know, let's talk a little bit about, once we have all this inventory of paintings and digital art and printmaking and we're trying to sell it, some online marketing ideas that you've taught about and can explain a little bit more, maybe some tips of the trade.
Sure. Yeah. Online marketing, I think, is definitely going to rely on social media. That's awesome. The ugly truth. Nobody wants to hear it.
I wondered about that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, nobody wants to hear it, mm-hmm. but it really does. That again, that ship has sailed, you know, the whole landscape, the whole way the landscape is laid out now is completely different. And the gallery model, in my humble opinion, mm-hmm. The gallery model is a business selling art is not as viable as it used to be, mm-hmm. you know, and the days of gallery patronage, those are long gone, mm-hmm. long gone. You know, galleries now are much more business-like and corporate entities and things like that. And in fact, some galleries don't even have a brick and mortar that they keep in one place. So like I was at Art Basel in mm-hmm. Miami a few years ago mm-hmm. and, you know, ran into some gallerists and stuff there. In fact, one in Kansas City, and I ended up going back to Kansas City later. I have family up there and I ran into the gallery and they were packing all the art. They didn't have anything on the walls. They were packing it up. And I said, oh, hey, I saw you guys in Miami. You know, I was going to come in and see what you had. She goes, oh no, we're packing up for the Chicago show. And I said, oh, okay. I said, how many art fairs do you do a year? And she goes, oh, like 10 or something. And I'm like, holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. She goes, that's where we do all our business. We do all our business at the art fairs. Mm-hmm. The brick and mortar is just an address, you know? Okay. And so if you're going to sell work these days and you're going to, you know, really, you know, get on the boat, then I really do think social media, and you got to make your own thunder. You mm-hmm. really have to make your own thunder.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the art fairs you're talking about, just for our listeners, and a lot of you do know these, but these are big name art fairs where the galleries are the venues. An individual artist, for the most part, does not pay to get in the fairs. Am I right on that?
Right.
It's galleries that are paying the big bucks. So that's their new spot to sell. And if you can hook up with those folks, that's the way it's done. I mean, there are art fairs that do cater to individual artists, but we're talking thousands of dollars to be in there.
Oh, yeah. There's a very popular art fair here in San Francisco that is held every year. And I know a couple of the artists that show at that. It's an individual art fair. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me now, I can't remember what it's called. It's held in a motel, motel.
Yes.
And it's like a huge party scene, and every artist gets their own room, but it's like a $5,000 entry fee.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, once you get all of the art and you get the room and you pay the fees and all of that stuff, it's going to cost you some serious money. Mm-hmm. But I know a couple of artists there that make their living handsomely at that, and they do maybe two of those a year, and they're making nearly six figures.
Wow. That's really encouraging.
Yeah. $80,000 to $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing two or three of these, but they hustle, you know, social media, newsletters, you know, showing up at these art fairs, and it is work.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that I used to get when I would teach art, teach business for artists class, mm-hmm. was, you know, can't I just hire somebody to do all this? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that mentality right there is very dangerous. Because
mm-hmm.
I think you do have to drive
I believe that when you do it yourself, you know what's invested. You know what you put into it.
Right.
You have a love of art. You give that to somebody that doesn't care about it except for getting a paycheck. They're not going to put 100% into it. I just don't see it.
Yeah. And the collectors want relationships with the artist.
Right.
They want to know you. It's just like me going to a restaurant. I want to have a relationship with the chef.
Right.
Don't get nervous. Don't get nervous. I want to go to the source. And I think collectors, if they can talk to you personally, mm-hmm. it means so much to them. It's very worthwhile. So you have to be there. You have to be there for sure.
I think that's true. And I think marketing should be spending as much time on marketing as you are making art.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe more. Maybe mm-hmm. more. You know, so, you know, the fact of the matter is that as an artist, you're a small business person, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so you got to do the shipping, you have to do the accounting, you have to do you have to manufacture the art. You're a small manufacturer, you make something. And so, you know, you got to do the marketing, you got to do all the things that go with running a business. And if all you want to do is sit in your studio and make art, have a good time. Sure. Go for it. But then you're going to be working at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me, I don't want to sell my art. I just want to make it. And I'm like, well, if you're working on a canvas, do you work on different canvases or do you just keep working on the same canvas? Because if you're totally true about that, you're just going to build up one canvas and do it over and over if it's just for making art. Sure. Everybody wants that earpiece and wants to be for mm-hmm. people. I think they do, but
I think that's part of the fun of it. And I think artists have such an entrepreneurial spirit. A lot of them, majority of them, I feel have that. That's sure. what makes us artists, that independent, you know, journey that we take. We take the road not traveled in half the cases. So it's being an entrepreneur and getting good at it. And with the marketing end of it, there are a lot of marketing mentors we can listen to too, aren't there?
Oh, yeah.
Who's your fave on that?
Oh, geez. She is wacky and I love her. Her name's Erica Reitman. She's on Instagram.
Writing that down.
She is not PG rated. I'll just tell you that right now.
Yeah. We like that.
Oh, she is amazing. And she takes no prisoners. She's awesome. Erica Reitman on Instagram. Marie Forleo.
Oh,
hands down business goddess. Mm-hmm. I took her B-school.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. 3 or 4 years ago, I took it. It changed a lot of things for me. Wow. And man, oh man, it really pumped me up a level. Marie Forleo, Erica Reitman, those are two marketing goddesses, honestly.
That is such a good
input. Oh, yeah.
And definitely. I know in our class, you talked a lot about, you know, how we rely on email lists to be in other, I don't know what you call it, little places of storage that we don't own. I'm not saying this right.
Platforms
that we don't own.
And that's
you
right.
You really stressed we artists need to grab those emails and get them in.
Absolutely.
Get them in our hands. I'm working on that one right now.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that came directly from Marie Forleo.
Oh, okay.
Directly from Marie Forleo, because it was like a light bulb going off over my head. You know, I've been on these social media platforms. I've had an email list for, you know, 20 years. And I was all of a sudden when she said that, she goes, you know, Facebook could close tomorrow. Instagram mm-hmm. could go away tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You can't reach those people. You don't own those people. And I was like, oh my gosh, duh, you know?
Yeah.
It's really true. You need to nurture that email list. And my email list, I look at my email list is a cash register.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every time I send something out, you mm-hmm. know, I get little notices, you know.
Yeah. Something's coming in.
Yeah. And so, man, I guard that with my life and I never, ever, I don't spam my people. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm absolutely relentless when it comes to keeping that list clean. Mm-hmm. So I had a list of nearly 5,000 people.
Wow.
And you know, I thought, oh man, this is great, you know, but my open rate was just abysmal, right? It was just not great. So I sent out a big blanket email and I said, okay, you all, if you don't open this email, I'm taking mm-hmm. you off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I now, my email list is right around 1900.
Uh-huh.
My open rate is about 60%.
Wow. That's wonderful.
That's double. That's almost three times the industry standard.
Oh,
so I was like, these are the people that really matter. Mm-hmm. And oh, my other mentor that I'm going to tell you is Seth Godin.
Oh, Seth Godin. Yes.
Seth Godin. I just took his mastermind class.
Oh, wow.
That's mind blowing.
Really? Oh,
I just took that and we just wrapped it up. And he said something that I thought was really amazing. He said, you don't need 10 million acquaintances. You need 1,000 raving fans.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 raving fans is all you need. And so I've got about, you know, 1,900 there. And I'm telling you, it made all the difference in the world. So I really fine-tune that marketing. I know those people. I love those people. And I take care of them. I make sure I take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. My email list, I would say, is the biggest asset I have in my business.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. And I'm actually, of course, I'm on your email list because I am a raving fan. You send good content, excellent content. It's kind of that newsletter form, but you put lots of stories and examples and of course your artwork. And I enjoy getting it.
So thank you.
Click and open those.
Thank you.
That's all good.
What do you think, Tisa, is in the future for juried shows, you know, statewide juried shows, national shows? Now, a lot of them have gone, you know, it's an online show, which you never get to see the real piece. You just,
right.
And it's kind of crazy. But the physical shows are coming back. What do you think about entering those? I know when I was a young teacher, that's what all there was. I said, you got to enter juried shows. That's the only way.
Right.
How has that changed in these years?
You know, I think, boy, you have to be really careful. You have to really do your homework. So I have students come to me all the time and they'll send me a link. You know, should I enter this juried show? And it'll end up being the wall in a, you know, doctor's office or something. And they're paying $40 to enter that show. Mm-hmm. Three slides, $40, whatever. I'm like, no. This is a complete waste of your time and money. Don't do that. Instead, now that that we're coming back, instead, go down to your favorite coffee shop. Ask them if you can hang four paintings on their wall. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, do something like that rather than, throwing money at these blind online entries that really are, honestly, some of them are just flat out scammy.
Yeah,
you know? I agree with you.
Flat out scammy.
You know, when you see one like on CAFE, check out the gallery, check out their history. How many people go? You know, where is the physical, you know, gallery at?
We've got Google Earth now. Mm-hmm. So I had a student recently ask me about this show, Laguna Beach and da-da-da and stuff. And I just put the address in Google Earth and went to the street view. And it was literally a gift shop that sold, you know, like beach balls and all kinds of, you know, little tchotchkes. Mm-hmm. And then they had like a 6-foot wall that they put art on. Mm. And these people are running open call for entry every month. Right?
Yes, I've seen that. Mm-hmm.
So be careful, be very, due diligence, you know, act as if you're buying a car, look under the hood, you know.
Good advice.
And then also go for the big names.
I think if you're trying to build a portfolio and a resume, you might want to enter a show like that just to say, I was in this show in New York, even though I'm not great shakes and it's not my show.
Right.
When you get, you know, about 40, 50, I think that's the time you really have to be careful because they're not going to do anything for you anymore.
And even nowadays, your CV, honestly, I mean, I'm not really sure how much weight it carries in terms of having a list of things on your CV. If you were, maybe if you were going to get into grad school or you were going to teach and try to get tenure, you know, they want you to have an MFA or whatever. But honestly, I think the landscape around that is changing as well. Yeah. I don't think that, and it all comes back to social media and, yes, you know, your email list and stuff. Nobody ever asked me for my email list when I sent them a newsletter. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so my advice when it comes to those juried shows, if you're a young artist and you want to build up your resume, honestly, I think going to the neighborhood coffee shop, mm-hmm, and having an actual opening with real people, sure, you know,
true,
that may get you more mileage. And then if you're going to do those online shows, if you're going to, you know, try and get that on your CV and stuff, look for the ones that have like a big name juror. They're in a really good institution, mm-hmm, like, you know, the Phoenix Regional Museum. I mean, I'm making that up, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Like, right. You know,
the Cincinnati, mm-hmm, Regional Art Show or something. Yeah. Something that's got some
meat behind it. I mean, and the pay to show places, stay away from those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pay to play. Oh yeah.
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 And you know, that juror point, you made an excellent point. On your CV, be sure to put the name of the juror, because that catches people's eyes. It really
absolutely
put that right on jury by, you know.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. And away you go. That, that does hold weight.
Yeah.
So, but good, good points. So, we've covered some ground. I know you covered a lot of ground. And you're all about ways for artists to be making a little bit of passive income. And you're on Amazon. Tell us about your Amazon Live. That's exciting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I, as you can tell, I'm not camera shy.
No, you're not camera shy. That's your personality. Yay.
So I actually, I've done so many, you know, live classes on Zoom. I mean, I've been teaching on Zoom live since about 2014. So when this whole pandemic started, I was, you know, I already had all the gear I needed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But I came across, how did I even come across that? I think they invited me or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know what. It was my YouTube channel. Because I've got, you know, I've got maybe close to 5,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel. Uh-huh. And so they invited me to go onto this sort of beta program on Amazon, where you basically, you remember the old QVC TV show?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've seen on TV.
Yes. And you can use it this way and this way.
Right, exactly. And so basically what that started out as is a way to promote products. And I was actually promoting golden paint.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. Strathmore sketchbooks and stuff like that. I started there, but then the commission fee is much higher if you're selling tech.
Tech.
Okay. So I moved over to selling iPads and my commissions went right through the roof.
Wow.
But that is, that's a program that's on Amazon. I'm still part of that program. I actually haven't been active on it for the last couple of months because of this big project launch that I'm, that I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
But, that is a very viable way to make passive income. Mm-hmm. The other way that you can make passive income, of course, is if you create digitals of your artwork and you allow them to be downloaded and printed. You can do that on your website. You can do that on places like Zazzle and Etsy, all of those places. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, licensing your images. Mm-hmm. You can license your images and make passive income on them. And sometimes, you know, I licensed some images back, 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the licensing fees were way more than the cost of the original painting. And I still have the original painting.
Oh my gosh. That is crazy.
So, you know, you license one image and boom, off it goes, you know.
I did that on DeviantArt way when they started. So every once in a while, I get something in a minute. Like, this is something I did 20 years ago.
It's
so,
great.
That's right. You know, it never goes away. If it's on the internet, it never goes away. That actually brings me to another mentor. And it's kind of funny because she's 40 years younger than me. Her name is Kat, and I can't pronounce her last name, Kat Coquillette. Should I put it in chat for you?
Yes, and I will get that in the show notes too.
Kat Coquillette. I'm probably misspelling the heck out of that.
And I could Google. Oh, there it is. Okay.
KatCoke.com. There. That's a lot easier.
Okay.
She is an amazing young woman who is doing a lot of licensing. She gives away a lot of free classes.
Oh,
y'all should know about her if you're going to do any kind of imagery that you want to have passive income with, you want to license things.
Mm-hmm.
She is phenomenal.
Oh,
phenomenal. Yeah, definitely.
Good stuff you're giving us.
Yeah, she's awesome. I love her.
Oh, now back to tech again.
Okay. I never get tired of it.
For example, let's say I have a friend who teaches online, meaning myself, of course.
Okay.
And
I'm asking for a friend.
I'm asking for a friend. And she wants to know, what is the most valuable, let's say, app that she could dive deep and learn, like, fast?
Oh, boy.
Regarding her
online teaching. Yeah.
You procreate then if you want to do it fast.
Yeah, that's not going to be fast. Well, I would say I'm going to have to say eCAM or OBA.
I was thinking you might say that.
Yeah. And actually, it's not going to be super fast. But eCAM, the eCAM community is amazing. And they do tons of free trainings. They do tons of, you know, they're on Facebook and Instagram and stuff. Lots of support articles.
That's for Mac only, right?
That's Mac only. Now, if you are Windows, just grab OBS, which is free.
Right.
It's open source. And it works very similar to eCAM. I haven't used it per se because I'm not Windows. I'm Mac. Right. But OBS also has a pretty good fan base. Well, a great fan base. And lots, you know, Facebook groups and lots of trainings on YouTube and stuff like that. I would say both of those because honestly, that is really where you're going to take your game from being an A game all the way up to the A plus plus game. And then you're going to be able to do things like whenever I teach a class on Zoom, the Zoom recording usually comes in, unless you ask them, you can go and ask them, but your Zoom recording usually comes in at 320 pixels.
Okay.
That's like super tiny and grainy. And, you know, if you contact Zoom's Zoom support and ask them, they'll upgrade you to 720p.
Okay.
Which still isn't much, right?
Right.
Not much. However, when I record, when I'm teaching a class in Zoom, I'm recording in the background in eCAM. eCAM records at 1260 in HD. Big difference.
And you can a huge amount of memory though, doesn't it?
It does. The files are big, but then I just offload them to the cloud. You know, but the files, yeah, the files are big.
And where is that cloud? I'm always wondering, where is it?
Where is that darn cloud?
Where's that cloud?
Probably a server farm in Ohio somewhere.
So the advantage is, Tisa, if I'm following you correctly, you're recording your class, right? And then I could take that class when it's ended, and I could, from that wonderful high-quality video, take snippets and then turn that into a class that people could purchase later, right?
Exactly. Not only that, you can take that recording, edit it, pretty it up a little bit, especially if it's in Zoom. You edit it a little bit, and then you upload it to Vimeo.
Vimeo.
And sell it as a standalone video.
There you go.
Well, these are all great things to hear from you.
Oh, wonderful.
We might have to do a part two.
So generous. Well, I'm signing up for your next class. What do you have rolling? What do you have rolling for the fall, let's say? We want to know.
For the fall, I am probably going to just be working on my product that I'm launching because I have a feeling, fingers crossed, it's gonna keep me pretty busy. That's going to keep me pretty busy. I do teach an online Saturday painting class that I love, love, love.
Okay.
That keeps me with paint and canvas. So I teach that almost every Saturday. Do a different painting every Saturday. And then I have a Tuesday advanced critique group that I've been teaching for 12, 13, 14 years. That keeps me busy.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, people can see you on Vimeo, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. Actually, if you go to acrylicdiva.com and roll down on the homepage, you'll see the videos there.
Perfect.
That you can purchase or rent, you know.
Purchase or rent.
Yeah.
Hey, it's all good. All good. I need to look at my notes, make sure I didn't miss anything. Yeah, Armin, you're right. This may take a few episodes here. Oh yeah.
I want you to get your money's worth.
I see another one. I don't know if I can sneak it in right now or not, but
sure.
Maybe I will. Okay. What are some common mistakes you see on artists' websites? Because you've designed artists' websites.
Right. I built some websites. Yeah. I think the biggest mistake I see is having a splash page, which is called a splash page. That is where people come to your site and then it says something like Tisa Blackburn Painter, and you have to click again to go into the site. That's a very old fashioned website. The splash pages aren't a thing anymore. So get rid of them.
Get rid of splash.
Okay. Yeah. Get right to the meat.
Get to the beef.
Where's the beef?
Yeah.
and the other thing.
People have the attention span. If it gets difficult in about 10 seconds, you're out of there.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've got 10 seconds to get that person hooked. Yeah. And then the other thing I would say is well done images. I've seen some websites where the photos are bad, the cropping's not good, all this kind of stuff. Be merciless with those images. You just have to get in there. If you can't do it, if you don't know Photoshop, then you need to get in there and pay someone to edit those images, because that is your face right there. Yeah. That's it.
So they don't know it's much better than that's on the, on your website. It's much better in person. No. You got to have it good right there.
Right on the website.
Exactly.
Do you feel that the iPhone will take good enough photos for websites?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Anything.
Teach a class on there, Val.
Yes. Oh, Armin, I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah, I think anything 8 and above, because anything iPhone 8 and above will do it. And also the other thing I wanted to say real quick is that optimize. So if you are loading, if you're taking that photograph, it looks gorgeous. It's cropped. The color's perfect, but it's a 5 megabyte file.
Oh,
hello.
Yeah.
You're the little spinning beach ball is just going to go round and round while your website loads, right?
Oh, that's true.
Optimize all of those. Every image you load on your website should be 72 DPI.
Uh-huh.
Bigger. You don't need it any bigger. It will also keep people from pirating your images. If it's 72 DPI, they can't download. And on top of that, I would say, don't watermark your images.
Oh, I agree.
Please don't.
Anybody that can Photoshop good can get rid of a watermark.
Of course. And not only that, it just looks so 1990s, It's like, no, stop that. You don't need to do that, because in the first place, if they want your image, they're going to get it.
Right.
Even 72 DPI, right?
Yeah.
There's programs that can add pixels in and stuff. So, meh.
Yeah.
But don't do that. Don't do that anymore.
I mean, if you're on the internet, you're taking that chance.
Yeah.
I see coffee mugs with my stuff on it.
Sure.
And all kinds of stuff. To me, it doesn't. I've actually bought a few coffee mugs.
And now I know what to have. Now your next present will be.
I get emails thanking me. Okay. Uh-huh. And they're like, so like, you guys have no idea. I get an email with a photo of my image printed out on someone's refrigerator. Oh. Thank you so much. I love this.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Somebody said to me once, you're famous when a crazy person thinks he's you.
Yeah.
I guess that goes through the same thing, right?
Right.
Well, I think we hit a lot of great topics, Tisa. You've been so generous.
Oh, thanks, Mel.
As usual. And I'm looking forward to working with you in the future.
Yes.
Keeping our thing going for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can always reach out if you have questions, or any of your viewers have questions, just shoot me an email.
That's
so
sweet.
Find me on Instagram or Facebook or somewhere. You know, I'm flying around the universe there.
That's right. Oh, yes. Everybody follow me.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful interview.
Oh, you're so welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening out there. And we will be seeing you. We're heading to Maine soon. You've heard about that. We're going to be going to our sponsors, the Golden Apple Studio and Residency. So we're going to actually broadcast from there. So you'll be,
that'll be great. That'll be
coming up. It'll be in a couple more
episodes. Awesome.
Golden Apple Art Residency offers an environment full of inspiration and free of distractions in which artists and writers can concentrate solely on the pursuit of their creative goals. The residency is a gift of time and space. It is located in Downeast Maine, and that is where director and artist Shelley Stevens has created a scenic setting complete with studios and lodging. Congratulations to the first rounds of residents who completed their stays, and best wishes to future residents this 2022 season. Registration is open for 2023, and you can learn more by emailing Shelley at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. That's snstevens at goldenapplestudio.com. Many thanks for sponsoring our podcast, Shelley, and we will see you soon. Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, valerieallenart.com, arminmersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious, and we'll see you next time.